Hi, and welcome to the 2080 Thrillcast. Now, unfortunately, this is the second episode in which I have some sad news to report before we start. The veteran artist John Cooper has sadly died after a short illness. Generations of comic book readers grew up with John's artwork, whether they realised it or not. And he was one of those veteran artists who never truly got the credit that they deserved. John worked for a myriad of titles, including TV Century 21, Valiant, 2000 AD, the rebooted Eagle, and many others. He will be best remembered for strips such as Johnny Red and One-Eyed Jack, the violent anti-hero who was one of the precursors of Judge Dredd and foreshadowed John's work for 2000 AD. He actually drew the first commissioned strip for Judge Dredd, which was a story considered so violent at the time it was held back until Prog 19. Later in life, he returned to 2000 AD and drew Armitage for the Judge Dredd magazine. We send our deepest condolences to his family and friends at this really difficult time. John will be, sadly, another veteran 2000 AD artist who will be very sorely missed.
Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Splundig Verthrig, Squaxdeck Thargo, I am Mulchar, and welcome to another episode of the 2000 AD Thrillcast. Thank you for joining us as we take a fortnightly gallop through the editions of the Judge Dredd, the Mega Collection, which is being released in the UK and Ireland by Hachette Partworks, and 2000 AD. I do hope that those of you that can have subscribed and got your amazing free gifts, it is available still from all good newsagents in the UK and Ireland. And if you would like to subscribe, please go to www.judgedreadcollection.com, where you can grab some awesome premium subscription options. Thank you to everybody who tuned in last episode for our chat with Chris Sims and also with the legendary Carlos Esquerra. This fortnight's edition of the Thrillcast is focusing on the next issue of the Mega Collection, which is Judge Dredd Origins, which is John Wagner and Carlos Esquerra's origin story, not only of Judge Dredd, but also of Justice Department and Mega City 1. Now, origin stories can be something of a mixed bag in comic book lore, with the same stories told over and over again, but Judge Dredd stands out as being unique as not having had his origin story told before. But with Origins, John Wagner revisited 35 years worth of backstory and attempted to knit it all together into a coherent narrative. And what a narrative he spun. Origins not only brings together the beginnings of Dredd's world, but also manages to kickstart the next phase of his development as a character, well into the Tour of Duty books, which will be part of the collection, and also into the later Day of Chaos and beyond. So Origins represents not only an incredible starting point, but also an incredible summation of 35 years worth of work and development. So I'm joined by Matt Smith, editor of 2000 AD, and also the editor behind the Judge Dredd Mega Collection. Matt, let's talk a little bit about where Origins fits into Judge Dredd's history, because obviously it's an origin story, but it's being told both in flashback and in real time. Were you surprised that John had gone with that structure for the story?
Yeah, I mean, I had no preconceptions on how the origin story is going to be told. As I mentioned in the introduction in the book, the script for the first episode just turned up unannounced in my inbox one day. The story had been mooted for years. You know, we never had the origins of Justice Department. It had been hinted at in various stories over the years, but we never had the full on story of how Fargo came to establish the Justice Department. I had no preconceptions of how the story was going to be told, but obviously I think John needed to have this driving plot element for the story to be told. Otherwise, there'd be no sort of there'd be no impetus for this whole kind of backstory to
It would have just ended up being a history lesson.
Yes, really, which yeah. I mean, there is a certain degree of the judges sitting in a cave being told the history of the Justice Department. But there is this driving mystery element that starts off with a mystery box being delivered to the Grand Hall of Justice, and what it contains blows open the whole preconceptions of what Dredd and everyone else thinks the Justice Department has been founded on.
Now, we will warn everybody right here that there are going to be fairly heavy spoilers in this chat, so please do make sure you've read Origins before you proceed. Obviously, the plot revolves around Chief Judge Eustace Fargo and what is assumed to be his body, but turns out to be his cryostasis sarcophagus.
Yeah.
It's interesting that John decided to go that way, and rather than chasing the legend, there is that central plot of like you say, the whole thing being blown open, and the very core of the judge's mission and the existence of Justice Department being blown apart.
Yeah, I mean, I should mention a credit should go to a 2000 AD fan called Robin Lowe, who first suggested the idea to John, and that's why he gets a credit on the first page of the story. I think he suggested this to John. I think about the same time as I started at 2000 AD, that what if Eustace Fargo was still alive? And that there wasn't actually a body inside this sarcophagus in the Grand Hall of Justice. So that's been percolating in John's head for years, and he obviously liked this idea of the whole Justice Department being founded on something that wasn't actually true.
Yeah, it kind of strikes at the heart of Judge Dredd, really, because his support of the law is so implacable. There has to be faith. There has to be a fundamental belief.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Without Dredd believing in what he's doing, then the whole system will fall apart. Which is why when we see in the build up to Necropolis, when he starts getting his doubts, then he quits. He takes a long walk.
Actually, for somebody who does have such an implacable love of and faith in the law, he has quit quite a few times over the years.
Yeah, and he's threatened to resign as well more than once. But yeah, he makes him an interesting character. If he didn't have these doubts every now and then it'd be. It'd be a fairly one-note character.
I mean, it's interesting in the context of the previous podcast on Judge Dredd America that this is the kind of fresh water that reinvigorates the garden of Dredd, really, isn't it? He can't just remain still, as many people think he does.
No. I mean, this the whole Oranges story also is owes a lot to stories in the past. I mean, there's elements from The Cursed Earth that Pat Mills wrote that come into play in Origins, and also it sets up a whole element involving mutants and their rights that plays out across many stories that came after Origins. So it's a very, very important story that completely changed the sort of the setup of Mega City One and Justice Department.
That was something I was going to come on to from your previous comment about the impact of Origins. So many times when you get an origin story, particularly in superhero comics, it doesn't necessarily change the status quo of the present time. Whereas Origins has fundamentally changed Dredd's world and has opened up. Well, we're rocking on for almost 10 years worth of stories that can spin out of it. So you have the Tour of Duty books. You have Day of Chaos also was impacted by the whole thing. That's a remarkable thing to do, not just to go back and explain, but then for that revelation to have an ongoing impact.
Yeah, I mean, like most superhero origin stories are, this is how this superhero came to be. And with Dredd's origins, we thought we knew how Dredd came to be, but actually, everything we thought we knew came to be was a lie. And the end of Origins, the very last panel of Origins, I think is a real kicker of an ending. It's it really throws the story on its head and kind of sort of slightly change your perception of Dredd and Justice Department and their relationship with the city.
Obviously, Carlos Esquerra has been a mainstay of the epic stories throughout Judge Dredd's time, from the Apocalypse War onwards. How important was it for him as co-creator of Judge Dredd to be drawing Origins?
Oh yeah, I mean, very important. I mean, there was no idea that, you know, that there'll be any other artist would draw it other than Carlos. I mean, you know, as the co-creator, he's got, you know, absolute right to detail what the early judges looked like, you know, what Fargo and the early characters looked like, and so yeah, he was always the first choice and the artist to do it. And he's also one of the reasons why he's so good at doing the epics is he's so consistently fast and reliable. Mm. He can turn around these episodes like nobody's business.
And there's also that incredibly moody opener from Kev Walker.
Yeah.
At the beginning, was that a conscious choice to have a different artist on it, or was Carlos not available?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a deadline thing, really, because by the time we were looking at how long Origins was going to be, I mean, John originally suggested he had an idea that it'd be a year long story, which we'd never done up to that point. And for a single artist to draw a year long story, it would have meant you'd need to have a year's lead time just to get it done in time for the weekly schedule. I was looking at how when we needed the last episodes of Origins, but we worked it backwards and realised that the earliest I could start it, I think it was like Prog 1505. This is back in like 2006. Mm. So for the jumping on point to be Prog 1500. I suggested to John to have a lead-in story, and so I quite like the whole countdown to Necropolis build-up. Mm. So how about a countdown to Origins one, sort of a lead-in story? He came up with the story of the connection, and Kev drew it out of you know, sort of giving Carlos the time to draw mm. the main body of the story.
Now this was 2006.
Yeah.
You'd been editor for how many years by that point?
Four years.
Four years. Yeah. And this was your first big epic story.
Yes. I mean, certainly. The beyond the sort of 12 parters. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is probably the biggest. Yeah.
You're now a bit of a veteran of the epic as 2008's longest serving editor. You've got Origins. You've had Day of Chaos. You've had Trifecta. What's it like as a fan, as a long-term Dredd reader, not just the editor, seeing these stories unfold as they pop into your inbox from John?
Yeah, I mean, it's really exciting. I mean, Origins particularly, you know, I mean, because this had been a story that everybody had been hankering for, and had been sort of, you know, rumours that maybe this would be the last story that John would ever write. You know, he'd write the Origins of the Justice Department, then he'd retire, you know. Mm. To read this Origins story first was, you know, it's a real thrill. It's good fun having these big epic stories. You know, we don't know where they're going to go, because John always keeps his cards close to his chest. He never kind of lets you know much of what's going to happen in the end. I mean, when Day of Chaos was going on, I said to him, how far are we going with this? You know, when he said, oh, I'm thinking of bringing the Dark Judges back, you know, and like, you know, the Academy of Law being destroyed, I was thinking, is he going all the way with this story or not? You know? they're very. I mean, they're a bit of a scheduling nightmare. If you're on a multi-part story, if you've got different artists all working on different sections, you have to get them all liaising so characters look the same. And mm. you know, sometimes somebody will be drawing something that the previous artist hasn't drawn yet, so you have to kind of do a bit of back and forth. But if you've got your good artists and they're reliable and they get the work in on time, then it usually goes without a hitch.
Mm. Now we're going to move on to talking to Carlos in a minute, but one of the missions for us at 2000 AD with the Judge Dredd Mega Collection is to introduce readers who've never picked up 2000 AD before don't know they're Judge Dredd. Give them an easy way to absorb the great stories. As a newbie coming to Origins, is it daunting with all this information in it, or is it a nice place to start?
It's quite dense with information, I have to say. I mean, you know, there is a lot of kind of world building going on, and you perhaps don't quite get the thrill of these little nuggets of info coming in if you're not aware of some of the previous stuff. Mm-hmm. Like you know, if you weren't aware of some of the Side Vision stories when it suddenly pops up about the Side Vision being established, you know, yeah, then it doesn't quite have the same resonance. For a newbie reader coming straight to Dredd, I'd suggest picking up something a bit lighter on the info front. Mm. Maybe first, something like The Cursed Earth, maybe.
Which is coming up.
And then delving into Origins, because I think you get more from it if you have a smattering of knowledge of Dredd, and it won't seem quite so bewildering, all the various characters.
Oh, when the Mega Collection is finished, I mean, this is going to have pride of place, really, isn't it? Once you've absorbed all that information, then Origins is going to become an incredible,
yes, yeah, I mean,
story that we know.
Yeah. I mean, you'll have the backstory that you will have seen Bad Bob Booth, the last president in Cursed Earth, and then you'll have the fallout from the mutant situation in the Tour of Duty books, and then Origins will be sitting in the middle of that as kind of the linchpin of the whole arc.
Great. Well, I'd like to thank Matt for joining us again on the 2000 AD Thrillcast. It's always a pleasure. Without further ado, let's talk to the man not only responsible for creating Judge Dredd, but also for the artwork in Origins, Mr. Carlos Esquerra.
Hi, Carlos.
Hi, hello. It's nice to be back again.
So, Carlos, Origins was John, after more than 30 years, explaining the backstory behind Judge Dredd and Mega City 1 and the Justice Department, after many, many, many years and many stories that hinted at certain aspects, and things had changed over time. Did John approach you and tell you that he was planning on visiting this untold past story?
Yes, we were talking a little bit beforehand, and yes, he was telling me, you know, about the origins of Judge Dredd, not only Judge Dredd, but the Judge system.
Mm. And what were your feelings about that?
Oh, I don't have any problem. You know, it's I like it. It was, you know, in that way, the circle is getting it finished. You know, it's with Origin, you can understand also many how the Judge system was created and why.
Mm.
So it's a very important part of the story. But normally, Judge Dredd always was based in practically in the actual day, you know, day to day about what that is happening. So, but nobody knew exactly how the judges come out and why. And I think that is a very good way to explain everything.
Was it daunting having to create the judges' early look? Because obviously Dredd's uniform and Dredd's world have evolved over time. What was your thought process behind choosing how those early judges looked?
I took some of the ornamental things from Judge Dredd, and practically they look more. Those judges, they look more to the real police and real police from today. You know, it's they are not so much so ornated as with the judges, and they are not so much so ornated because in those times, I suppose maybe the people still was not crazy enough as later in the real life stories of Judge Dredd. So it was not necessary to notice them from far away who is judge, who is the law, or who is not.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's interesting that John was able to bring together so many of the different kind of plot ideas and themes and mentions from the past together into one story, because as many of our fans, and indeed us in the office, do, you know, we notice the inconsistencies that have built up over the years where John and Alan have thought of something and then dropped it, or somebody else has introduced something. So for John to be able to bring all that together in a really coherent narrative and a story that fits, I mean, you know, reading it now, I think that was really remarkable.
You will, yeah, but remember that just that is John. Well, and I don't mean physically, you know, even if they look alike a little bit. But what I mean is the story of Just That is John's story. You know, it's everything is on his head, and he's the real creator of Just That. You know, the of the story of Just That. He can make everything going smoothly, you know, and tying things that apparently they don't have any connection, and then he's able to tie because everything is inside his head. So it's just that the story is inside his head more than anyone else, you know, it's his story.
And obviously, we've been talking about the Apocalypse War previous to this. Let's kind of compare and contrast life for you back then and life for you when you were doing Origins. What were the differences in your not only your artistic style, but also the way that you work between what you were doing on the Apocalypse War and when you came to do Origins?
Well, the artistic way is different. You know, it's different style totally, even if I am always myself, but it's in different way. And also the main thing is that I was older too. So yes, so you can see Dread and the situations are not as well. I was older, and also John is older too, so Just Dread is a little bit more compassive, you know. It's more, you know, so savage as it was before. You know, it's I don't know how to say it. More soft.
Soft. It's always a very strange word to apply in any way, shape, or form to Judge Dredd. But I do get your meaning.
Yeah, he's now more comprehensive than before. He's more. He understood more the people. He can. I don't say he can bend the law, but he can have another interpretation sometimes.
Well, there is an element of compassion now. If you look at the things that happened with the mutant laws that he brought in, he recognised that they were fundamentally unjust, whereas old-style Dredd wouldn't have ever countenanced even the suggestion that that might be the case.
Yeah, well, remember that, for example, in the first story, even the one that was never published, he shot a guy just because he was stepping out from the pavement.
Yeah.
or you know, or even if someone throw out a paper in the street, you know, he can be take to the ISO cubes.
Yeah.
And even the ISO cubes, you know, because originally the first ones, it was life or death, nothing else. The ISO cubes, they start coming. Yeah, a little bit after, but so you know, everything has been softer with the years. You get more, yeah, maybe more soft, more comprehensive, more understanding to the people.
Sure, I find it incredible that the term Judge Dredd has entered the lexicon as a metaphor for police brutality, and it's so often trotted out when you see those big lines of riot police with their visors down so you can barely see their faces and all the kit over them. It's I mean, like so much in Judge Dredd, it was remarkably prescient and forward thinking.
Well, it's because the what happened with Judge Dredd is not everybody accused Judge Dredd of being a fascist and so on. I always say no. You know, a fascist is Batman. A fascist is any vigilante character. But just that, no. Just that is, if the law says something, he just follows the law. That this is also what happened with many of these riot policemen. They follow whatever the superior say. If the superior say fire with this against these people, they just follow the order, nothing else. So I don't think they are vicious by nature. If they are vicious, it's because someone in top are telling them to do that. Someone in top, he can be telling that by voice or by laws. So the only way these people cannot be aggressive is changing the laws.
So as far as you're concerned, that separates them from the fascists, because the fascists just do what they want.
Exactly, yeah. You know, a fascist is... Batman is a very typical example of fascist. He's a vigilante. He's not defending law and order. He's defending his own law. Okay, he's supposed to be just punish the bad people, but is not told by any law to guarantee his right, you know, to do these kind of things. He's doing because he wanted. And I don't think it's too much difference in between a bad man or, I don't know, a guy from the Ku Klux Klan burning a black guy, because for him, for the Ku Klux Klan guy, a black guy is something bad also, you know?
Now, in terms of your old style on The Apocalypse War, I presume that was just straightforward pencil and pen and ink onto a Bristol board.
Yes.
Yeah. How does that compare with what you do now? Is the process the same?
Yeah, the process is practically is the same. You know, the only thing is I don't use Bristol board, but but it's the same. Also, now it's a smaller size. In those times, I was working in something like an A2 plus, something like this. Well, almost A2 pages, because in that way I can work faster. As you know, you can be more sketchy, and once it was printed, you notice less the sketchiness.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and now it's in a smaller size, so it's better and more finished the artwork. But practically the process is the same. I make pencil, ink, paper, I scan, and then I put the coloring in with the computer. That is the only thing that has changed.
Because I remember especially your work on the Necropolis, which is going to be collected in the collection further down the line. That was kind of watercolor washes and marker pens and all sorts, wasn't it?
Yeah, more than watercolors, they were inks.
Right, okay.
Yeah, annealing, coloring, you know, like Indian inks, but in color. And because the color, it was stronger. And I always love strong color, you know, as with watercolor, the color is more subdued, soft. And then when I started with the computer, for me was in the year 96, I think it was. I was also the first, maybe the first British artist to work for comics, to color the comics with a computer.
Right.
Okay. And it was like a toy. So, you know, I really enjoyed it. I was doing crazy things. You can see some of the comics from that time. And the 10th Planet, I think it was one of them. And I don't know, several of them. And I was crazy with the coloring with the computer. Plus also the workers in the printing also, they do not understand totally the way I was coloring, and well, sometimes the final product is crazy.
I think that's an element that a lot of people forget about comics, is it's not just the work that the artist or the colorist does. The printers then have to make sure that the right settings on their machines are correct, and that the paper isn't going to make everything all mushy and brown.
Yes, that is very, very important, and especially if you are working with the kind of paper from that time that it was like almost newspaper paper, and also doing it with the computer. My settings in my computer, they were not exactly the same as the setting they got in their computer.
Right.
You must remember that it was the first times, the first years, you know, in with this kind of thing. So it took quite some time, quite a long time, several years, until everything was we can work together perfectly.
Right. Now, you mentioned when we were talking about the Apocalypse War about the dynamic of a writer writing down, you know, two armies meet with thousands of soldiers meet on a windy plane or something like that. And you sort of say, well, why can't you just write a story about one person in a desert? Because much of Origins is set in the Cursed Earth, which is has that real Wild West desert feel to it. With your background as a Western artist, is the Cursed Earth a location that appeals to you?
Yes, I really like it. You know, for example, I never like it very much doing it in clean city. You know, in a city from today, it's very difficult for me to do it. But when it's something like in the desert or the Kai cities. Something that is dirty, I don't know, maybe because I am a dirty artist, dirty all artist. my artwork, if it's better, you know, than I never been, you know, doing very clean lines. I really like it, you know, especially in deserts and, as I say, you know, the Kai towns or machinery that is not a gleaming machinery. I really like that kind of thing. I really enjoy it.
Well, it's interesting you mention that, because of course your first ever pinup of 2080, I think, really struck Pat Mill. Not 2080, Mega City 1 really struck Pat Mills, because the buildings looked so incredibly organic. You know, they weren't the straight edges of somebody like Ron Smith. They weren't the clean lines of other artists. There was a very much a feel of the city as a kind of almost like a plant in of itself, that this had grown over time. And even you work on Strontium Dog, all the machines, the cars, the hover bikes, the spaceships, they're all rounded and feel very organic and real.
Yes, well, it's because told you before, I like to draw something that is alive. You know, that is very, very important to me. And with the buildings in Mega City originally, it's because the description I got from John is Mega City, it was a Mega City, a big city, growing very fast indeed. In Spain, we said, well, it's growing like mushroom. So the idea was to make the buildings like mushrooms, you know, like just a part of the phallic sense that many people have. is like mushroom, you know, it's a round top, like going upwards.
Yeah.
And that was always my idea, you know, in that way.
I love the idea of Mega City 1, the look of Mega City 1 being based on something that's both phallic and born out of fungi. That's quite a mix.
Yeah, well, basically, I suppose it's because I hate to do straight lines. I think in the old times, in one occasion, Mike McMahon, he was complaining because he said, oh, you cannot do a bloody straight line, you know. And it's true, I hate to do straight lines. It's too clean for my taste.
Well, with Origins, John kind of sparked the next phase of Dredd's development as a character, because it led into the Tour of Duty storylines, which were also going to be part of the Mega Collection, and all the way through to Dredd being exiled to the Cursed Earth. How do you feel as the co-creator, seeing, even after all this time, the character continuing to grow and continuing to change?
I see it very well indeed. You know, it's for me, my characters, the characters I created, they are a little bit like, you can say they are like my sons. You can say that. So each one has different characters, different personalities. So you cannot control the way it's going, one or the other one. It's something that you cannot control it. Even if sometimes you try to do one thing, is the character has to follow their own way.
Okay.
Yeah, that is the reason I suppose that, for example, with Dredd, even if it has been taken by so many artists, each one in totally different style, and each artist supporting to the story something, it always been thin. You know, it's... you cannot change him, his character. So that character is the one that John created.
And it's remarkable that when so many other comic book characters around the world have been rebooted and changed and other people taken over, Dredd is still Dredd. He's still the same man who pushed the button in the Apocalypse War, who's now riding out into the cursed earth to find the body of Chief Judge Fargo.
Well, that is because of Ian. You know, it's so well done that he can keep it. He's him all the time. You know, he's not that a character that's changed depending of the artist who take it. No, it's, you know, it's him. I think that is due to John Scripps.
Now, you've mentioned earlier in our conversation about a lot of people calling Judge Dredd a fascist, and that's usually the term that people use. But you mentioned that actually you consider characters such as Batman to be more fascist because they're operating under their own rules. They're using violence outside of the framework of the law. And of course, Dredd, in the course of the aftermath of Origins, finds himself on the outside of Mega City One's Justice Department because the law that he fought for to allow mutants into Mega City One has failed. I mean, that's a remarkable thing to do, to have a character fight for justice and for it to blow up in his face.
Yeah, but you know, that is real. That is that is something that it can happen perfectly. So you know, it's not a fiction thing that superimposed on the character. It's something that has been developing over the years into that way. So it doesn't seem strange that, you know, it's been a natural development for him.
And just to turn to you for a second, and a bit of real life, because I came and visited you in Spain a number of years ago to chat for an interview for the magazine, and shortly after that you unfortunately had a bout of ill health with your lungs. Do you want to just tell us a bit about that and how that affected your perception of your work and the future of your involvement with Dredd?
No, I don't think it affect me at all. You know, it was, for me, it was an event that has not, well, it was important in that moment. But now it's something like 4 years since I was diagnosticated with a lung cancer, and in the stage 3, which it was very, very dangerous, but I was lucky enough to find that right in time. So it took away one lung, and I still can survive. So, you know, I don't even think about that. I feel perfect. The only thing is every 6 months I have to go to do my test to see that everything is okay. But it will not affect me at all. You know, it's the only thing maybe affect me is that I'm more grateful than ever to all the fans. You know, the response from the fans in the moment it was made public, it was fantastic. You know, it's and ever since then, I appreciate more all the fans than ever before. You know, that was a turning point for me with the fans. Whatever I can do for a fan, I never turn him down. Or even now every time I go to England to any convention, I do whatever I can for the British fans. You know, I feel it was very, very touching. You know, that I feel fantastic. You know, it was a fantastic rush.
Good. And of course, you're one of the special guests at the San Diego Comic-Con this year.
Yes, I've been invited, and I'll be there. I've never been in San Diego before. I always considered it was a bit too far away. I'll be this year, and I'll be in the, I suppose I'll be in the stand of 2018, signing.
So, just talking about Origins again, you mentioned that you felt that the circle had been completed because you'd created the character and you'd come back and you'd told his origin story. Is there a story that you would like to tell about Dredd and his world?
No, not particularly. I think you know whatever the story is on. I like it, you know. It's so no, I don't have any particular one. I, you know, whatever John write, I'll be very happy. As I say, you know, we got very well together, so I'll be happy with whatever he write.
Excellent, and long may it continue. So it's been another absolutely packed thrill cast for you this week, and I just want to say a huge thank you to Carlos Esquerra for joining us for the last two episodes. Carlos, thank you so much indeed for sparing us the time to chat to everybody.
Okay, thank you very much, Mike, and I hope to see you in 2018.
So once again, I'd like to thank Carlos for joining us on the Thrillcast. It's been an absolutely fantastic couple of episodes, and I hope you've enjoyed listening to one of the greatest, I don't think I'm being excessive here or hyperbolic, one of the greatest comic book creators the industry has ever brought us. Make sure that you subscribe to 2000 AD on iTunes, and if you do so, leave us a little review so that other people can know that you're spreading the good word. Make sure you follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Google+. Just go to www.2000adonline.com and follow all the links. And make sure that you subscribe to the 2000 AD Thrill Mail, which is a weekly thrillgasm delivered directly into your inbox with all the latest news and announcements from the House of Tharg. So once again, Earthlits around the globe, thank you very much for tuning in to the 2000 AD Thrillcast, and see you next time. Splundig Verthrig!